Chapter 9. Steve Morris jumped aside, but Roiland caught his chin with his fist, sending him onto the ground with a heavy thud. "Stop it!" Corey screamed. Steve rolled over the minute he hit the dirt and scrambled to his feet. The boys scuffled in the darkness until Steve, heavier and stronger, wrenched Roiland's arm behind his back and yanked hard. Roiland screamed in pain. Steve released him and gave him a hard shove, sending Roiland tumbling forward until he crashed into a garbage can, then sank to the ground. The pain in Roiland's shoulder was so intense he almost passed out. Steve stood over him, glowering down. "Leave us alone, you understand? The next time you get in my face, I'll wrap you around the telephone pole." Steve grabbed Corey's hand, and they ran to the car together. In seconds, the Cavalier roared past Roiland as he lay in the debris by the garbage can. Slowly, the pain in Roiland's shoulders subsided. He got up, brushed the dirt off his clothing, and staggered towards his car. Steve had beaten him, humiliated him in front of Corey. Not that it mattered anymore. Corey was gone. She had always been gone. Having her as a girlfriend was a cruel fantasy. Hakeem had been right when he took Roiland aside and warned him about Corey. Roiland saw it all clearly now. She wanted the necklace, and when Roiland started bragging about how rich he was, how he had money to burn, Corey went for it. She never really liked Roiland. She used him. Now that she had what she wanted, she went for the guy she really liked, Steve. Roiland sat in his car, choked with sobs. He could not go on. He could not go home and wait for Tuttle to yank his chain every time he needed work done. He could not go back to school and watch Corey draped over Steve's arm. He could not take it anymore. He had nobody to turn to. Before, when things got rough at school or at home, there had always been Mr. Miller. He had always understood. He had always offered a shoulder to cry on, and he never betrayed Roiland. Now, there was nobody to talk to. Roiland thought he had no real friends at school. Guys like Hakeem tolerated him politely, probably pitied him. Deep down, they did not like him. Who could blame them? Darcy was the same way. To his face, she acted friendly and polite, but Roiland could see in her eyes that she thought he was a loser. Why wouldn't she think that? He wondered. Every time he talked to her, he was rude or mean. He never let Darcy or anyone know how he really felt. Scared, angry, and hurt. Instead, Roiland hid his feelings by acting tough, and now he had been doing it so long, he did not know how to do anything else. Roiland had never in his life felt so totally hopeless. He wished he could drop down a manhole and vanish into the city sewer where he felt he belonged. And then slowly, a face came to him, out of the darkness of his misery. The broad, warm face of Cooper Hodden. Cooper grinning and saying, "Anytime, anything on your mind, you can tell me about it." Cooper had said that, but had he meant it? Were those just empty words he threw at Roiland, the way you throw a dog a bone? Were they empty words like those Corey used when she told Roiland she loved and adored him? If Roiland actually got in touch with Cooper, would Cooper think, "Oh man, don't tell me a loser is going to latch on to me now. Why'd I tell him I gave a rat's behind about him? How am I going to get rid of him now?" Roiland thought that was probably so. But he was not sure. Cooper Hodden was his last hope. Roiland went to a nearby public phone and dialed Cooper's number. The phone rang several times, and Roiland almost hung up. It was past midnight. Then a sleepy voice said,
"Hello. You gotta have the wrong number, because nobody I know is stupid enough to call me this late."
"Cooper, it's Roiland. I gotta talk to somebody. Please," Roiland said.
"Say what?"
Cooper, you said if I ever need somebody to talk to, I mean, it's okay if you change your mind, but I'm going down for the count, okay?" Roiland said, his voice shaking. There was a brief silence at Cooper's end of the line. The sleepiness was gone from his voice when he said, "Where you at?" "In the parking lot of Jade Palace Chinese Restaurant."
"I know where it's at. Hang on, I'll see you in 15 minutes, Cooper said.
Roiland leaned against the Honda and waited. There was still a dull ache in his shoulder where Steve had twisted his arm. Roiland was not sure that Cooper would actually come. And when 20 minutes passed, Roiland figured Cooper had gone back to sleep. But then a familiar old pickup truck rattled into the parking lot, and Cooper jumped out. "Hey, Roy Lynn, what's going on? You sounded real nervous on the phone." Cooper's big brown eyes were wide with concern. "Big Lindell put a hit on you, or what?"
"My life's falling apart. I don't know if I can go on," Roland said softly.
"What are you talking about, man?" They sat down on the waist-high concrete wall that bordered the restaurant's parking lot.
"I just discovered Corey and Steve together holding hands, kissing. She was interested in the necklace I gave her, not me."
"Oh, I'm sorry, man," Cooper said. "But there are other girls out there, you know.
But that's not all, Coop.
There's something worse.
Much worse."
Roland stared down at the blacktop of the parking lot as he talked, because he did not want to see the shock that would surely appear on Cooper's face.
"Coop, there was this nice old man, Mr. Miller, living in the apartment building where I live. And we've been friends since forever, you know. Anyway, I did something stupid. I needed $300, you know, to get that necklace for Corey. I was going to go in there and ask Mr. Miller to borrow the money, because he'd do anything for me. Then I come in, and he's sleeping in front of the TV, and there's his wallet. And I take the money and just cut out of there. I'm figuring on paying it all back. I swear it, Coop."
"Oh, man," Cooper said. "The old dude found out?"
"Worse, Coop. It's way worse than that. I take the money, I go get the necklace. I'm thinking everything is cool. Next day, I'm coming home from school, and I meet Tuttle, this old devil who's the janitor in my building. He's telling me that Mr. Miller is dead."
Roland spoke heavily, the effort of each word like lifting wet cement.
"Dead?" Cooper repeated. "Dead from what?"
"He was pretty old, Coop. Tuttle said he saw me steal the money. He says Mr. Miller found his money gone from his wallet and started freaking out. Tuttle said he was so upset when the money was gone that he got a heart attack and died of shock, all because I stole the money. Tuttle says that makes me guilty of killing Mr. Miller."
"What?"
Cooper cried.
"Yeah. Tuttle says that's the law. If you're robbing somebody and they die, then it's the same as if you shot them or something. You can get nailed for murder. Tuttle says I'm looking at life in prison. He saw the whole thing. And he even kept Mr. Miller's wallet with my fingerprints on it so he can prove I did it if I cross him.
Well, then, let me get this straight. This Miller dude died, and the cops came, right?"
"So what did you tell them?" Cooper asked.
No, see? Tuttle wrapped the body in a blanket and made me help him take it downstairs to the basement where he lives. And he's been digging his grave down there to bury Mr. Miller. And Tuttle says we gotta pretend he just moved away. Now that old devil is driving me like a servant and making me do all his chores. And he says if I don't keep on doing it, he's going to turn me into the cops. And that's the end of me," Roland explained. Cooper clasped his hands to the sides of his head and said, "Man, you really got yourself in a mess of trouble, Roland. But listen up. How are you so sure this old dude died of a heart attack? Maybe Tuttle seen you steal the money and he got an idea. Tuttle goes in there and hits the old dude over the head or shoots him. Maybe Tuttle killed him his own self and plotted to blame you to get himself a servant. So, man, what'd the body look like? You see any blood or bruises?"
"I never saw a body, Coop. By the time I got there, he wrapped Mr. Miller in blankets and put ropes around the body."
Roland winced at the horrible memory of carrying his old friend down to the basement. "Listen to what I'm saying, Roland. That old man's body could show that he was killed by some violent act. That will put you in the clear. Then you didn't make him die of a heart attack, okay?" Cooper explained. Roland stared at Cooper. "What am I going to do? If I call the cops, they'll send me straight to jail. What if it was a heart attack? I'm in handcuffs in 2 seconds after Tuttle tells his story."
"Where did you say the man was buried?" Cooper asked.
"In the basement, next to the room where Tuttle lives. There's a stinking little corner where Tuttle stores the garbage and stuff. The concrete is thin because the place was dug up to fix some pipes. The workers just spread a little cement over it when they were done. So Tuttle broke it up, and that's where he put Mr. Miller," Roland said, barely getting the words out.
"Let me see," Cooper said. "Does this Tuttle ever leave the building? Like, is he ever gone long enough for us to do some looking into the matter?"
"Yeah, Every Sunday, he goes to the racetrack. He's gone all day, and he comes back late in the afternoon. Well, it's Sunday now, Cooper paused. Roiland looked at his watch. It was past 1 o'clock in the morning. You got a way of getting down there? He added. Yeah. But what are you getting at? Roiland asked. Horror began to spread through his mind. Cooper, what are you thinking of? You ain't saying that we should... You got it, Cooper said. We gotta dig the man up. We gotta see what killed the old dude as much as we can. That'll give us something to go on from there. I can't, Cooper. I just can't. I ain't got the stomach for it. Roiland groaned. Roiland, listen up. I got a feeling in my gut. You hear me? It was too smooth, too easy. Like this Tuttle sees you stealing. And all of a sudden, the old dude wakes up and finds his cash missing. He freaks out and dies like that? Don't he go looking around like old people do, seeing if he put the money somewhere else? Don't it sound strange that he look in his wallet and he's dead and cold in a few seconds? It just don't make sense. Yeah, you know, it does seem strange, Roiland admitted. He had not really thought about the details of what happened the day Mr. Miller died. Another thing, Cooper said. If Mr. Miller was having a heart attack, how come Tuttle didn't call 911? That's what people do when somebody's having a heart attack. They don't just sit there and decide the dude is dead and ready for burial. Roiland thought about what Cooper said. Maybe he was right. The possibility that something else might have caused Mr. Miller's death filled Roiland with a tangled knot of emotions. On one hand, he felt hope. Hope that maybe he was not the reason his friend had had a heart attack. On the other hand, he still betrayed Mr. Miller, and his old friend was still gone forever. But what bothered him even more was that now he was not sure what really had happened. Maybe his death was not caused by a heart attack at all. Perhaps what happened was much worse. You really think the old devil Tuttle might have killed Mr. Miller? Roiland asked. Maybe. That's why we got to see what we're dealing with, Roiland. We got to dig him up, Cooper said. Coop, there's no way I could do that, Roiland groaned. You have to, he insisted. And whatever happens, we go to the cops. Cooper, we can't. Easy now. I got an uncle who's a cop. He's a good guy, Roiland. He works with kids all the time. He knows when somebody's worth saving. You got no rap sheet, right? I'll bring my uncle around, and he's going to work with you. You never meant nothing but borrowing some money from a friend. That ain't no serious crime. I'm swearing to you, Roiland. I'm going to be with you all through this, and you're going to come out all right. Coop, this ain't your problem. How come you doing all this for a punk like me? Roiland asked. Don't be putting yourself down. You ain't no punk. No friend of Cooper Hyden is a punk. You hear what I'm saying? We both in this together, man. Brothers, right? Cooper clasped Roiland's hand. Listen, Roiland, I know where you're coming from. Not everybody understands what it's like to have to watch your mama run from your dad because he's beating her. But I do. I can't walk away from a brother who needs me. We got to stick together and help each other. That's what this is all about. We're friends, hear me? Yeah, Coop, but I don't deserve a friend like you, Roiland said. I ain't been nobody's friend. Roiland, you were Mr. Miller's friend, Cooper reminded him. Yeah, right. Then I robbed him, Roiland said. You want me to smack you upside your head? You didn't mean to rob nobody. And you did him plenty good turns, didn't you? Cooper demanded. Yeah, I get him stuff for his birthdays. One time I got him a nice sweater from the thrift store. He really liked that. He wore it all the time. Tuttle never turns up the heat in the apartments the way it should be, and Mr. Miller was always cold. He told me once that the sweater was the nicest gift he ever got. Oh my God, Coop. I hope he wasn't wearing that sweater when he died. I think maybe he had it on the last time I saw him. What if Tuttle buried him in it? Cooper grabbed Roiland by his shoulders and shook him. Take it easy, man. You probably gave the old dude more joy than he ever got from anybody else. Whatever happened, you meant him no harm. You hear what I'm saying? Roiland tried to listen to Cooper's advice, but in his mind, all he could think about was finding his old friend's body in that cardigan sweater. It was well past 2 a.m. when Roiland finally made it home. He and Cooper had agreed to meet again around noon. Even though he was exhausted, Roiland was unable to sleep. Just after sunrise, he heard his mother washing dishes in the kitchen. On weekends, she'd like to get up early to have her quiet time, as she called it. He did not want to talk to her or anyone, so he stayed in his bedroom. There was just too much on his mind, and he was not about to tell her that he planned to spend the afternoon digging up Mr. Miller in the basement. Just thinking about what he was going to do made shivers race through his body. After a few hours, he heard Amberlynn and the younger children getting dressed up and ready for church. Then he heard his mother walk up to his door. "Roiland, it wouldn't hurt you a bit to come to church, you know," she said. "I will, Mom, next time," Roiland promised. "Yeah, sure. You all the time saying that, and it never happens. You watch yourself. Pretty soon the Lord gonna get tired of waiting on you." As soon as everybody left, Roiland washed and got dressed. Cooper showed up just as he finished. Cooper usually had a pleasant look on his face and a twinkle in his eye, but now he looked grim. "I got the shovels and the flashlight," Cooper said. "Let's go." "I'm not sure I can go through with this," Roiland said. He felt sick to his stomach. His head was pounding. "You can. Just think of something else while we work, Roiland," Cooper said in a flat voice. They stepped carefully onto the rickety stairs and crept quietly into the dark room below. Roiland led the way through the debris-filled basement to the corner where the grave was. Gray metal garbage cans stood like tombstones in the basement's dim electric light. "This is no place for anyone to be buried," Roiland thought, "let alone a good man like Mr. Miller." "Here, see where the dirt is freshly turned?" Roiland whispered. "Yeah, I see," Cooper said somberly. He grasped one of the shovels and handed the other to Roiland. Roiland thought he was going to pass out, but Cooper grabbed his shoulder and said, "Come on, we gotta do it." Cooper turned over a spade full of dirt. Then Roiland did the same. The freshly turned dirt was as soft as flour. Quickly, dirt began to pile up alongside the grave. Then Cooper's shovel hit something soft. "He didn't put him down very deep. I'm hitting something already. And we only went down about a foot," Cooper said. Roiland was so sick to his stomach, he thought he would vomit. But it was not from any smell coming from the grave. It was his own emotions churning up inside him. Fighting off nausea, Roiland dug a little more. Then both boys dropped to their knees and began scooping soil away with their bare hands. Roiland recognized the dull gray blanket as the one that had been on Mr. Miller's bed for years. The rope was still wrapped around the body. Tears filled Roiland's eyes, blurring the sight before him as they scooped and brushed the dirt from the blanket until the length of the body was exposed in its shallow grave. Cooper pulled out a knife and cut the twine. "We're going to cut through the blanket and have a look," Cooper said grimly. "No need taking the body out of the grave right now. We just got to see what we're dealing with. And then we're going to call my uncle." "Oh my God. Oh my God," Roiland moaned. "Take it easy, man. Gonna be better when Mr. Miller's taken away and given a decent burial. He don't belong in no place like this. It's disrespectful," Cooper said. "Here we go now." He started cutting through the blanket to get to what was underneath. "Hang on. I'm almost getting through now." Cooper gently peeled back the blanket. Roiland forced himself to stare down into the grave. He expected to see the red and white cardigan sweater, but all he saw was dull gray burlap. "Looked like he wrapped in something else, too," Cooper said. He slashed carefully through the burlap, and then he gasped. "We on to something big here." There was a small light hanging overhead on the other side of the basement, but it was not enough to see clearly into the grave. Roiland grabbed the flashlight Cooper had put down and shined it into the shallow hole. He gasped at what he saw.